Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. From our workshops in Juneau, Alaska and London, England, we get together on the Echolink system to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
KL7R, KL7R, on the slopes of the Mendenhall Glacier. This is M0HBR in central London. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Good to hear you again this morning, Bill. It's 9:16 in the evening in Juneau, and we've got 3 feet of snow on the ground.
Oh, wow. I guess that happens up there. Yeah. Well, it's 6:16 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time here in central London, not far from Greenwich, and we have no snow on the ground. 3 feet of snow would be quite big news here, Mike. It does snow here about once each season, and London looks very nice under snow for the first hour or so, but then it goes away very quickly, and that's usually it for the year. But we have we're under clear skies now. I know I was just out doing some astronomy from South Kensington, which is, I think I'm the only one doing it in this neighborhood. But I'll tell you about that in a minute. And this is I guess Solder Smoke 40 for those keeping count on the 19th of November 2006. So I wanted to tell you about the Hamfest last week. Billy and I were just getting ready to go, and now I can provide a Hamfest report. Go ahead.
All right, I'd be interested to hear that. And I have a little more feedback on pickaxes. I spent some time actually trying to do what I thought they'd do. Back to you there, Bill. Tell us about the field day.
Yeah, we had a great time. It's the Kempton Park Radio Rally, or in to translate to American English, it's a Hamfest. Happens twice a year. It's the one I always go to because it's not far from the house. It's easy to get to, and I know how to get there. And although I'm tempted to go to lots of other rallies around the UK, I'm not a very good highway navigator, and so I stick to this one, and I've been there probably five or six times over the last 3.5-4 years, and enjoy it very much. This time, and I want to report on all the good, high quality, absolutely necessary radio junk that I purchased at the rally. We were talking about 73 magazine, Mike, just last Sunday morning, and lo and behold, I get out to the rally, and of course, while at the rally, as any real Hamfest fan knows, the good stuff is in the boxes under the tables, and there, waiting for me, was a stack of 73 magazines from the early 1970s, which is, of course, the prime period of interest for me. Being that is the period that I got interested in ham radio. So I found some of these things, and it was really kind of spooky because I remembered, I mean, I'd see the front cover, and I'd say, yeah, I remember that one. But, so I picked up a stack of 73s, which is fun. I have, I'm thinking about your comments on the need for a good workbench power supply. I bought a workbench power supply that, seems to be at least partially working. I think I have to go in there, and I might have to change the filter caps. The big electrolytics might have dried out over the years, but this thing promises to provide 24 volts unregulated across one set of terminals, and then regulated 15 volts with selectable current limitation and adjustable voltage, so that should be useful. The 24-volt thing kind of attracted me because every once in a while I see solid-state amplifier designs that that need 24 volts, device 12. So this might be pushing me up into a slightly higher voltage category here for amplifier design. That's good. You mentioned the need for the ever-present need for high Z headphones, and I found a set in a box, cardboard box under one of the benches. So we've got high Z headphones. I hit not the gold mine, but the copper mine, Mike. In one of these cardboard boxes, a truly phenomenal quantity of very large copper-clad boards. And this stuff is not cheap and anymore, but I bought this whole stack of it, I mean, in really big, useful-size boards for about $3. And so that was a good purchase. And just before we left, we found an old monitor. We'll call it a new old monitor for Billy's computer. The old, I think I might have mentioned that the old kind of, I guess, Sony Trinitron-based monitor that he'd been using had been getting really out of focus, and I tried degaussing it and did everything you could do, and, man, it was like looking through a bucket of water at some places on the screen. So we threw out the old one, and for £5, we bought an old new one. And it's much clearer. So, really, a very successful Hamfest. Billy brought along his skateboard and got some really great skateboarding in at the end of the Hamfest at the racetrack, right up there. There's some great asphalt there, and he had a good time with that too. So, a very successful Sunday visit to the rally here, Mike. KL7R M0HBR.
Wow, Bill, that sounds like a score there. KL7R back. You got high Z headphones, copper clad board, power supply, and some 73 mags. The copper clad board is great by itself. But sounds like you scored big time there. It sounds like a really pleasant rally. I haven't been to a decent one. We'll just put a period right there. Actually, I did once. I went to a nice one when I was going to college for a year in Sacramento, and I think Sacramento had a really nice one. And I remember I picked up a little spy radio, Jackson C radio, and so that was kind of a nice chance. But it sounds like you had a great time. Well, nothing so productive here. I've been letting smoke out of a frightening number of devices here, Bill. Over.
Well, Mike, you know, it goes with the territory. Yeah, it happens. It's not fun, but it reminds me of the line from The Godfather. You know, this is the life we have chosen. I guess it just goes with the territory. What devices are you? Are you letting? It also reminds me of that song, "Who Let the Dogs Out?" Who let the smoke out? What devices are you releasing smoke from, Mike? Go ahead.
Well, so far I've burned up two of those 24 74 240 chips, the buffer driver chips that you're supposed to be able to get a half a watt out of. And I've burned up two of them. Every time I try to bring them up above 5 volts, they want to run away and catch on fire. They don't actually catch on fire. The smoke comes out. It's a nice little curl of smoke, and they stop oscillating. Usually get a warning because it stops oscillating about a second before the smoke comes out. I built that power supply, and I had it wrong. And I thought I was getting current regulation out of it, current trip out of it, but I wasn't. And so it basically goes up to 2.5 amps. I found out that I had a couple of pins reversed. I had inverting and non-inverting for the op amp that did the current sense, and I had that backwards. Fixed that, and the power supply worked better in that it tripped when it went over current. So that was good. So then I built another one of these transmitters using the 74240, and And I noticed it was getting all this weird in-band modulated digital junk on the carrier. And I thought about it a while. I said, well, maybe it's the power supply not being regulated or not stiff enough or something. So I swapped it out and plugged in my regular rig power supply, and that's what it was. The all that inbound oscillation disappeared. Modulation disappeared. I said, okay, how much power am I getting out? Oh, 20 milliwatts. Well, that's not quite enough, so I'll jack the power up. So I lifted the center pin up on a 7805 because I didn't have a 7808, and the thing caught on fire. So anyway, so I blew that up, blew up two of them, and I blew up my SIG gen. I blew up my DDS-30 SIG gen. I don't know how I did that. So that gave me an opportunity to rebuild my power supply, rebuild the oscillator and transmitter, and to change my SIG gen into a DDS-60. So I changed it into a DDS-60, and then I also modified my manual spectrum analyzer, so it has 3dB pad in and 6dB pad out to the crystal filter. Seems to be working quite a bit better. So I'm pretty happy with the manual spectrum analyzer. I'm pretty unhappy with the 74240. I think I'm gonna. I got three more of them, but I don't know if I'm gonna spend any more time doing that sort of a transmitter. I might go back to something. Like a universal transmitter. I might go that way. And I've done some more work on a pickaxe there. That also was not terribly productive. But M0HBR KL7R.
Wow, sounds like a tough time there with the carnage of 74240s and test gear. Well, my sympathies, Mike. I had recently had an episode like that where I was involved in a serial killing episode of any 602s. I destroyed many of these things, and you know they're not making them anymore, and they're hard to get, so I feel bad. And they're extremely useful, and of course they feature in just about every other design for ham rigs, especially in the QRP area. So when you blow one of those up, you really feel like you lost something. And what I was doing is when I was building the balanced modulator for my 40-meter DSB rig, I would get the thing going, and it would be fine. It would work for a while, and then it would just die. And I couldn't figure it out. And, you know, I think what I was doing was I had failed to put any kind of transient protection across the little relay that I was using for transmit to receive switching, and I was just shutting the thing down when it was going to receive, and I think the coil on the relay just let out a big high voltage spike every time I switched it off, or went one way or the other. You know, sometimes these relays can put out a big spike, and I think that was what was happening, and that was knocking out the 602s. So I'd use the old trick of putting a reverse diode across the coil of the relay, and so that when that big reverse voltage spike came up, it would just short it out and wouldn't send it across the supply line. So, but it took me multiple NE602s to figure that out. But my sympathies. Well, it sounds like you need a break. A Hamfest would be a good break. And I, like I said, this is the one that I go to here. I used to go to some really good Hamfests. We were living in Virginia from 92 to 96, and I used to go to Frostfest in the middle of the winter. I think that was down near Richmond, and then we had. The radio club that I was in, which was Vienna Wireless up there in Northern Virginia, we sponsored our own Winterfest, Hamfest, around the same time in February, and that was fun. I always had a good time at that one. Then there was always a Hamfest out in Manassas, the guys, anybody's listening in the Northern Virginia area will know what I'm talking about. Good Fest out in Manassas and a few others around, and I always had a good time with those. We didn't have any Ham Fest in the Azores, but I remember we had one in the Dominican Republic, and it was fun, but there just wasn't a sufficient number of hams in Santo Domingo to regularly have a Ham Fest. But we had one, and it was out in the park, and I got a chance to meet. It was early in my time in the Dominican Republic, and it was a good opportunity for me to a whole bunch of the local hams, and that was fun. Let's see, what else to report? Oh, I wanted to mention this. The 73 magazines, they have, it just happens that in the issue that I picked up, in the set of issues that I picked up, they have a general class license study guide. And, it's interesting for a few different reasons. One, it's really well done, and they do a great job at providing kind of a really intuitive description of some of the more difficult to grasp concepts, and it's the kind of thing that you could be scratching your head for years on some of these notions, and then or some of these kind of electrical theory and engineering concepts, but whoever put this series together did a really good job at making some of the more difficult, for me at least, concepts very understandable. The other thing is a very high level of technical discussion that was going on in the 1970s for a general class license. I mean, I think anybody who mastered these concepts these days would be sort of considered a kind of a cutting-edge rocket scientist among, frankly, among the radio amateurs. So I sadly think it's evidence, and I know this is a bit controversial, but I think it's evidence that there has been quite a bit of dumbing down in the licensing system anyway. I don't really think it's such a big deal, because it's just a hobby and people can get into it at whatever technical level they like. It's just for fun. But I found it surprising the very high level of the high technical level of the discussion for the general class license. I'm tempted to go out and get their advanced and extra class license guide. That must be really something. A KL7R M0HBR.
I remember the advanced class being hard. I remember the extra was not that big a deal compared to the advanced, and I remember having to work a little bit for it. Well, cool. It sounds like you got some good stuff there. Did you find any articles that worthy of passing on? Other than that, that'd be pretty interesting to know if you found a bit of gold hidden in the old 73 magazine. So, maybe you could say a paragraph that kind of gives a hint of what you're talking about out of that magazine.
All right. Okay. I thought about that. Let me see here as I thumb through it. You know, there's so much good stuff in here. There's a mobile CW receiver in the, the July 1970 issue, made out of 6U8 tubes. It reminds me a lot of the Mighty Midget receiver that was in QST. I built one. I have a lot of info on that on the website. But let me see. I'm thumbing through it right now. While I do this, let me make an appeal to listeners. I have been trying for years to find an article, and I believe I saw it in 73 magazine from around this period. It must have been the 73 from sometime in the early 70s. And it was a receiver that I tried to build as about a 15 or 16 year old aspiring home brewer. I think it was a direct conversion receiver, probably for 20 meters, but I'm not sure. But the distinguishing characteristic of it was that it was varactor controlled, There's been a couple guys on QRPL who've been really great about trying to help me find this magazine. We've been unable to do it, and I think one of the reasons is that I was kind of focused on the years 1973, 1974, 1975. But looking at this batch, this is the 1970 year, I recognize a lot of these issues. I guess I was about 12 years old at this point. This was before I got the license, but it may have been that I saw this this schematic and had it in my stack of 73 magazines at home, and then later on, in 74, 1975, built from that. So if anybody has a big stack of 73 magazines from the 1970s and doesn't mind taking a look through the indexes, I think they actually had an annual index at the end of each year, to look for a receiver with a varactor-controlled local oscillator, that'd be great, because I would like to go back and find out now what I did wrong and try to build it and get it going after all these years. It was a very frustrating failed homebrew project, and this was in the days before the internet, way before the internet, of course. So there wasn't that resource to go out. Let me see. I found one pair right here that just kind of stuck in my mind, and I just marked it off as being good. They were just talking about impedance transformations and the use of transformers. And impedance ratio equals the voltage ratio divided by the current ratio. And dividing any number by its inverse is the same thing as squaring the number. So that, it's not no great, real great deep mathematical insight there, but I always wondered how you got that, why the square root was in that formula, you know, N1 over N2 equals square root of Z1 over Z2, and there it is. And so instead of just giving you the formula, they give you sort of the logic behind it, which I think is very helpful. Yeah, they've got a good section on impedance matching and talk about a lot of the kind of different concepts of impedance matching, one being what he calls kind of mirror impedance matching, in which suppose you have a source that's 50 ohms resistive with 50 ohms of inductive reactance. If you go just by if you just try to mirror in the load what the source impedance is, you would go obviously with 50 ohms resistance and 50 ohms inductive, but that wouldn't give you maximum power transfer. You would get maximum power transfer, of course, if you put 50 ohms capacitive in the load, canceled out the inductive reactance, and then ended up with, in effect, 50 ohms resistance in the source and 50 ohms resistance in the load. But there's a real good discussion of inductive impedance matching. And then there was one other. Taking a nostalgic look through the 1970 issues of 73 magazine, they had a nice description of Q and how to think about Q in tuned circuits. I don't think I have that one here, but it was just very simple. And one way you could, if you have a tuned circuit, one way you could increase the Q is just very simply, for the same resonant frequency, use a combination of capacitance and inductance, where you have a higher capacitance value and a lower inductance value. Of course, when you lower the amount of inductance in there, you're in effect reducing the amount of resistance in the circuit, because almost all of the resistance is in the coil. So there you go. That's a very simple way to think about how to improve the Q of a tuned circuit. It's all really basic stuff, but it's useful to have this basic stuff explained kind of at that kind of intuitive level, so that you could just, I don't know, for me anyway, that you could just get your, just grasp the concept a lot easier. I don't know if I'm explaining why I find these simple explanations so useful and appealing, but I do. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R. Well, it sounds you know, if that's part of the general study guide, that's pretty nice having that sort of description of the mathematics and what all that. Pretty good stuff. Well, sounds like you have some good reading there to go do here over the next little while. Let's see. I do want to mention that I did a little more work with the pickaxe. I downloaded the software to program a pickaxe using BASIC, thinking that based on what the documentation said, that I could code in BASIC and export to assembler and then burn a regular pick chip. So I went and grabbed the software and I was doing some coding using a they have a way to do it using flowchart. So I did this thing to blink an LED on the pin of a pick using flowchart. You know, basically turn it on, turn on a pin, wait a second, turn off a pin, wait another second, and then go to the beginning. So I did that, and I that worked nicely, and the simulation worked nicely. And then I exported it to BASIC and ran that, and that worked nicely. And then I wanted to export it to assembler so I could burn a 16F88, which is the same as the pickaxe 18X. And so I went to do that, and it says, sorry, you can't burn to a 16F88, but you can burn to a 16F84. Well, I got a couple of them laying around, and so I went to burn to a 16F84, and it says, I'm sorry, you can't burn to a 16F84 unless you purchase a pickaxe burner. So I got a little annoyed, and I don't think pickaxes are a horrible thing, but I do get annoyed when companies do that, when they make it impossible for you to use something more generic than their specific hardware and software. So I may order some pickaxes. I may just go back to using open source compilers like JAL or something, JAL. I noticed there's a new version of JAL out, so it looks pretty good. Enough of that. I don't think I'll be talking about pickaxes anytime here soon, Bill. I think I had my fill until I get one to play with it the way they're supposed to be played with. I think I'll do something else for a while. If my 10.140 transmitter keeps being as painful to build as it is, I may take a break from it also. I do notice that I am getting a bit tired from time to time, and maybe it is time to take a little break. I get emails from all these people saying, well, how in the world do you find time to do all of that building? And that's really a valid question. I think the main reason that I have time to build is that my son has grown up and moved out, so I have time to play back here, and to either watch TV or build. So that's why I have time, and plus I imagine the podcast itself kind of pressures me a bit to perform and have something ready for the next issue there. So that probably explains it about as well as I could there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, Mike, it sounds like pickaxe is an appropriate name for the device. Just kidding. I'm sure it's great piece of gear. But I as you talked about these messages that you got from the device, sorry and all that, it just, for me, it was a reminder of sort of the difference between analog radio and the digital world. My Drake 2B or my HW8, they never send me sorry messages like that. Of course, they can't do some of the things that the digital stuff can do, but it's a whole different ball game. I never get any wisecracks or sorry messages from the Drake 2B. Now, it'll occasionally the dial string on it will occasionally break from overuse, and I'll have to restring it which is something I guess you don't have to do with a 74 240S or a pickaxe, but I guess it's, you know, you have your advantages and disadvantages with both. Yeah, and on time, we will talk about this a little bit and see when we get to the mailbag, but Ramakrishnan, a listener out there in Bangalore, India, asked about time. He's quite busy with work out there, and he asked about how I had time for this stuff. And my secret, it's no real secret, but my approach has always been that getting up early in the morning is the way to do it. I'm definitely an early morning radio amateur, and I've been getting up at 5 a.m. since Army days. I guess I could blame it on the Army, but I just like getting up early in the morning. And it's a good time to do radio. The world is quiet. The world, the phone is not ringing, and the family, everybody's still asleep. So I don't feel guilty about spending time in the shack at that hour because, well, they're all sleeping. And I told Ramakrishnan that that solder seems to melt better at 5 a.m., for me anyway. Let's see, what else was I going to mention? Yeah, other hobbies. This morning is an important morning for radio astronomers, Mike. It's and I guess for radio amateurs, because there's a connection here. The Leonids meteor shower, or hopefully storm, is supposed to peak right about now. And I was out just an hour or so ago. The sky is just brightening now, just starting to brighten up here in London right now. But an hour and a half ago, I was out looking to see if I could spot any meteors, and I was looking right at Leo, the constellation, and nothing. So I guess this is either an indication that the shower wasn't as intense or spectacular as expected, or it could be that it's just proof that central London is not the best place for astronomy of any kind. I am happy to report, however, that that Saturn has returned to the morning skies of London, and it's in Leo, so or more or less in Leo. So I had the telescope out this morning and was looking at Saturn, and always spectacular. Could see Titan, the moon, off there, off the ring system. So we had some very good visual frequency DX this morning, Mike. It was fun. But yeah, Saturn is back. KL7R M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Well, I fired up WSJT, which is a digital mode for working meteor scatter, and I listened on the calling frequency of 50.260, and I didn't hear anything. And I also listened on channel 2 television carrier 55.250. And I heard a few long pings, but it didn't seem like a particularly pretty active. It didn't seem very very active as far as meteor pings. I've heard more pings per hour than now. I've got it running now, and when there's decent meteor activity, you can hear a ping about a couple of minutes, and I haven't heard any during this transmission. So, all right, Bill. Hey, I think I'm getting tired, winding down. I don't know if I'll be quite as productive here next week. I may put my feet up and unwind a while. But congratulations on Solder Smoke 40 there. I can tie the ribbons on it if you want there. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, okay, Mike. Well, I want to mention something before you go that might help you during the week ahead to recharge the batteries a little bit in the homebrew department. I have discovered, and I was really pleased to find this, and I found it via the make Make Zine blog, that there is a video equivalent of solder smoke out there. It's just amazing. Three radio amateurs, Jim, Tommy, and George, I believe they're in Mississippi, have put together a television show available through the web, and it's called AmateurLogic.tv. AmateurLogic is one word, and I caught their episode number 10. They're up to episode 10 this morning. It goes for about an hour. Very interesting, a lot of fun. Really, really very creative. Good production values. A lot of fun. They were discussing this morning how to make coffee cans into Wi-Fi antennas, and then how to use an old DDS satellite dish to get 12 dB additional gain. Oh, great fun! They've made a very high voltage capacitor using kind of yogurt dishes and glue. You know, all the kind of stuff that we are interested in. I think listeners of Solder Smoke would really, really enjoy it. And I really recommend you take a look. It's available through YouTube, or I think they're also listed on the Google Video section. And if you do a search for Amateur Logic, you'll find it. And I am also putting a link to it on the video page of the Gadgeteer website. So if you go to my www.gadgeteer.us website, scroll down to the video page, you'll see a link to Amateur Logic TV. But congratulations to Jimmy, Tommy, and George on a really great program. It must be a lot of work to put together. I know it's some work to put the audio together, including video. It must increase the amount of work quite a bit. So congratulations to them. And oh man, I knew that it was our kind of stuff, because right there when he was building the high voltage capacitor, he whipped out his almost all digital electronic LC meter that we all have, and measured the 316 picofarads across the homebrew capacitor. Great stuff. Let's see. Before we go, Mike, it's time for standby. Hold on. Let me get the thing going. Solder Smoke mailbag. We've gotten quite a bit of good mail this week. I mentioned the emails from Ramakrishnan. The youth has called his Victor Uniform 3 Radio Delta Delta. He's in Bangalore, and he's got a great website up too. I'll put a link to it on my blog, and I laugh a little bit because Ramakrishnan asked that we include links, and I pointed out to him that we always promise to do that, but we're very bad about it. So I'm going to try. I'm going to give it a shot, and I'll see if I can get the link up there on the blog. But I think if anybody searched for Victor Uniform 3 Radio Delta Delta, they'd find Ramakrishnan's site. He has an interesting link there. There's a Yahoo mailing list for homebrewers in India, and it's really interesting. I stopped by there and looked at some of the messages going back and forth about projects that are taking place there among homebrewers in that country, and I think all of us can benefit from looking at that. There's a lot of very interesting stuff going on there. We got email from Mike, WA6ARA, about pulse width modulation, and he reports that he's using an inverter circuit that employs pulse width modulation techniques to synthesize 60 hertz AC from his solar panels, and he's taking the energy produced through this system and feeding it back into the power system, and it makes makes that power meter run in reverse, which must be very satisfying there, Mike. Thanks for sharing that with us. Des M0AYF came in with some additional suggestions on pickaxe and QRSS. On that subject, I just want to note that the latest ARRL newsletter had a little. I get it by the electronic version here, and it has some an article about QRSS work on 500 hertz there are experiments going on in the States authorized by the FCC in the 600 meter band, and guys there are using QRSS techniques, and apparently to great effect. So I think probably the AWRL website would have more information on that. We got a very nice email from a young fellow named Reg Lancaster. He's 15 years old, probably one of our youngest listeners. I'm very glad to hear from you, Reg. It's especially appropriate as Mike and I discuss the 1970 issues of 73 magazine, because that was the period in which we were the age that you are at now, and it's a great time to get involved in ham radio, and wish you the best of luck with it. Reg was asking some questions about MOSFET power amplifiers, and I hope I was helpful there, Reg. If you need additional help, please drop us a line. Greg, NE1OB, points out that AMers are using pulse width modulation and provides a couple of sites on that topic. I'll try to get those up on the our bookmark site. Mike reports that he has added Ramakrishnan's webpage to the bookmark site available at the soldersmoke.com homepage, so check that out. And thanks to Greg for your email on the pulse width modulation. And finally, we got an email from a listener who usually prefers to remain anonymous, so I won't mention his call, but he's well known in the experimental methods for radio frequency design community, and he remarks on my experiments with hovercrafts made from muffin fans, and sends information on how to build a significantly larger hovercraft, a hovercraft that is capable of carrying several people, and the air pressure is provided by a leaf blower, you know, the standard leaf blower that most of us have sitting in our garages. So I told Billy about this, and now I'm under great pressure, no pun intended, to build the leaf blower hovercraft device. And I'm sure everybody listening will find this this project very appealing. It fits into the it's very much in keeping with the home brewer modification, make do with what you have kind of workshop ethos. So thanks to the contributor who talked about the leaf blower hovercraft, and we'll hopefully be able to report on something in that area in the weeks ahead. That's all I have, Mike. I think that wraps up Solder Smoke 40. Let me turn it over to you to tie the ribbons on it. Thanks a lot. Don't get discouraged by the all the smoke that's being released. I'm sure you'll be able to make progress here soon. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Well, you did a good job again. Yeah, I did add bookmarks to SolderSmoke.com based on Ramakrishna's request, but I haven't yet added his site to that, so I'll have to get that done before this gets published, and I'll take care of that right away. Well, best to you, Bill, and your family there. I don't know if I'll talk to you before Thanksgiving, but if not, have a pleasant day. 73 to you and the guys, M0HBR, KL7R clear.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Happy Thanksgiving to all of our U.S. listeners, and we'll be preparing turkey here in London. We already have it in the freezer, so we'll be ready to go. 73, happy Thanksgiving to all, KL7R, M0HBR, 73.